listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net. Oh, my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Goats has returned, but will he be reaping the rewards as Bayern Munich travel to Borussia Dortmund to take on the yellow machine as they look to reduce the gap at the top of the Bundesliga table? It's apparently the best derby in the world. Liverpool take on Everton in the lunchtime kickoff here in England. And of course, it's the MLS playoffs. They continue as well, with Portland Timbers looking to claw their way back against Real Salt Lake, and Sporting Kansas City playing host to the Houston Dynamo. It's a big, big weekend of football. Welcome to Friday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and, of course, the views from around the world of football. Didn't realise how much our maps thing was going to take off yesterday, that's for sure. We'll be talking about that. We also will be talking a little bit of German football today. Well, plenty of German football, in fact, because later on, as well as being joined, of course, by Rafa, we will be joined by Mr. Ross Dunbar to talk all things Bundesliga, the build-up to the biggest game in European football this weekend by a long way. You can talk about Liverpool-Everton all you want, and believe me, we'll talk about that and whether this is being overhyped as a derby game these days. But the real game in Europe this weekend is this massive, massive game with Dortmund just 4 points behind Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. It's a chance for Bayern to stretch away early on. It's also a chance for Dortmund to claw them back, and right before a Champions League week as well. Will that have any impact? We'll be asking Ross all that and more here on the show a little later on. It is, of course, MLS playoff weekend as well. The international break, what will that have done to the rhythm of Major League Soccer in these sides? The Timbers have had now plenty of time after they've been sat licking their wounds from that 4-2 thumping RSL handed out to them in the first leg. Will, though, travelling back to Portland, will that make a difference and give them the edge and an opportunity, if they win 2-0, to take it to penalties? Of course, no away goals in the MLS playoffs. SKC with that draw against the Dynamo in the first game down in Houston, going there to BBVA Compass Stadium and getting a clean sheet and getting away without the Dynamo scoring anything is a big, big deal. We know how good the Dynamo are at home, and SKC now can take them back to Kansas and see if they can overturn last year's, the two-time, in fact, runners-up of the last two MLS Cups. A little bit of something coming out of, American sports, I guess. They're, of course, handing out the awards for Goal of the Season and all the individual player awards and whatnot are starting to be racked up nominations coming out the other week. And everybody's looking at all these sorts of best moments of Major League Soccer's season. But what I'm really liking at the moment is what took place in the NHL. I've been, you know me, I get into NHL quite a lot, and I've been getting into the season this year. Columbus Blue Jackets against the Calgary Flames. I put this on Wednesday night, and I meant to talk about it yesterday on the show. But an absolutely fantastic save by the Calgary Flames netminder, as you guys might call it, I guess, in the States. Reto Berra. Berra. I do apologise, Reto there for getting it wrong, as always, butchering names here on World Football Daily. I've never seen a bicycle kick perform like this. Zlatan's goal against England, does it have anything on this? A bicycle kick save from an ice hockey keeper. If you haven't seen it, we're going to post up the link on World Football Daily. You're going to have to check it out. It's something quite special indeed. It's difficult for words to describe it. He slides across to the right of his goal. As he's coming across, he seems to almost lose his footing slightly. slips and slides, and as he starts to fall backwards, facing the goal suddenly, he performs a bicycle kick with his left boot, with his right boot, flicks it up in the air, and overhead kicks the puck away to safety. An incredible save. Never seen anything like it. If you haven't seen it, get on it. Check it out. It's something to behold, that's for sure. Let's move away from Major League Soccer and the US sports for the moment, though, because it is a big Bundesliga day today. Delighted to say that we have our guest ready and waiting for us here to join us today on the Friday edition of the show. He is the one, the only man to talk a lot of Bundesliga football with, and also hark back to a little bit of England-Germany as well from earlier in the week. It's a man we haven't had on the show for a very long time, and I'm delighted to say to welcome him back to the WFD airwaves, our good friend, Mr. Ross Dunbar, joining us here on WFD. Ross, mate, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show. How you been, my man?
Very well. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure to chat with the experts, especially before big games like this one in Germany this week. Before we get into that, just a brief assessment, if you will, from a German perspective of what took place at Wembley on Tuesday night. It wasn't the grandest performance by them, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of interesting pieces in the media about the rivalry itself, but I think for Yogi Löw it was more an opportunity to assess what sort of options he had at his disposal. Remember, obviously, Germany were without Philipp Lahm and Bastian Schweinsteiger, who are obviously going to be so influential at the World Cup. So I'm not sure there's much to read into it yet. I think the Italy game was a little bit more of a challenge, trying to right the wrong psychologically of what happened in Poland and Ukraine last summer. But I think any win over England from a German point of view is obviously very well appreciated.
Do you think, though, that rivalry, does it mean as much on the German side as it does to the English? Because there's so much build-up about it before the game, even though it was a friendly. Does it matter in the same way across the other side of the channel in mainland Europe?
To be honest, whenever I've been in Germany, it's never been a massive deal. I'm not saying that as a Scotsman trying to create the rivalry between England and Scotland, but you know they tend to be more club focused anyway. You know, they tend to have the same attitude that we have back in the UK, that is club over country, and I don't think the national team, especially against England, has that sort of significance. Obviously, if they win on Wembley soil, then it's a completely different kettle of fish, but I don't think they go out to try and create a massive rivalry like it is on the other side of the channel, where I think the English certainly see the Germans as the big rivalry in Europe.
I mean, that's weird. Why is Wembley such an important place? Is it because of 66, without trying to bring up, you know, the one time that England won the World Cup and all that sort of thing? But is there part of that because of what happened in 66, and they just want to kind of to exercise those demons whenever they go to Wembley?
I think it's the fact that it's just such an iconic venue. I mean, when you look at Germany, for example, I mean, I can't really think of a stadium in Germany where the Germans would see as home as England do with Wembley. I mean, even when obviously Chile went to Wembley and won by two goals, when Scotland went there, there's something quite romantic about going to Wembley and playing against the English, who are obviously the custodians of the beautiful game. I'm not sure whether the Germans are still looking to right the wrongs of 66, because they've been to Wembley and won many times since. I mean, I think they won the last game at the old Wembley, if I'm right. So I mean, I think it's more just a battle of superiority. I mean, Germany and England are probably two of the healthiest sort of countries in Europe when it comes to football. I think there's now a Premier League versus Bundesliga sort of rivalry beginning to emerge. So I think it's probably more to do with that as opposed to, you know, the national rivalry or trying to try and get over the demons of 66.
What are the expectations of this national side going towards Brazil 2014? Because there's always a lot of, and there has been for the last few major tournaments, of talk about Germany and how they should be winning a World Cup or a European Championship with the squad that they've got. Yet there's always some sort of holdback, something that stops them from being able to get through it. Last time it was Mario Balotelli, for instance, in the Euros. Is expectation falling slightly for this national side, or is it all still as hyped up as it has been in previous years?
Yeah, I think certainly from what I gather, they want to go to Brazil and win it. I mean, I think when you compare them to other countries in Europe, I I think there's still a lot of question marks about maybe Spain and obviously about France, who just qualified. The Dutch are going there with a bit of confidence. But I think the Germans would still certainly think that they can go there and win. I mean, their squad is filled with an array of talents. I mean, they've got such an incredible depth, and I think there's been a lot of pressure, especially in the mainstream press, towards Yogi Löw, that, you know, he has to get this one right, because I think, especially in the last Euros, there was a lot of question marks over certain performances, certain selections. I mean, they weren't as great as they were in South Africa in the last major championship. So I think certainly from their point of view, there's a little bit of pressure to try and right the wrongs of especially what happened against Italy in the last Euros.
It's always a hot topic, international football, especially after, of course, the international break. But we're moving now back into domestic football, and what a way to kick back into the domestic game with Munich taking on Dortmund this weekend. Does the international break affect these two in any way, shape or form going into it?
I think certainly in both cases, I think there's certainly instances where you would say that the international break might have an impact. Although I must admit, I'm a bit of a traditionalist that, you know, having to play two games in 3 or 4 days isn't really that big a deal. But I suppose with the intensity of a match, you know, between Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich, there's going to be maybe mental fatigue coming into it. It would be interesting to see, you know, how beneficial the chance that Philipp Lahm and Manuel Neuer had to rest throughout the week, whether that would work into Dortmund's favour. Obviously, Dortmund obviously have key injury issues, and some of that stems from international breaks. It's just weird that they've scheduled this international break in particular a few days ahead of probably the biggest game in European football at the moment.
It is arguably, as you say, the biggest game in European football. The repeat of obviously what the Champions League final at Wembley, and just 4 points separating these two sides in the Bundesliga table. Are you surprised that Dortmund have kept on the coattails of Bayern this season? Bayern haven't started to race away with it like they did at this point last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, there was a lot of discussion on Twitter as to whether, you know, Bayern were about to begin a monopoly of German football. You know, they obviously were into trying to sign Robert Lewandowski in the summer, and they managed to get Mario Götze. It was interesting to see the opinions as to whether Dortmund could recover. I mean, I personally thought that they would do okay. I mean, I must admit, I'm quite surprised that they've hung on as well as they have, because in recent weeks, Bayern have been absolutely outstanding, and I think many in Germany would see Dortmund as the only club feasibly who could stop them from racking up maybe 45, 50 games unbeaten. Obviously, now it's 37 games, which is the all-time Bundesliga record. And I think it's a fascinating game in so many ways. I mean, psychologically, Dortmund have had quite a good record against Bayern over the years. I mean, they went 5 or 6 games unbeaten when they were winning the championship. Last season, there was 2 draws. So it's very nip and tuck between the two. And it's interesting to see if Bayern win on Saturday, whether that's a complete knockout blow in terms of the championship.
It's the old debate as well, really, the unstoppable force against an immovable object, the best defence in the Bundesliga against the best attack. Does Dortmund's attack have the ability to obviously cause problems, but can it dismantle and destroy such a solid defence that Bayern have got this season?
I think it can. I mean, I think to use a very overused cliche, but attack probably is the best form of defence from a Dortmund point of view, given the problems they have at the back. And obviously, we shouldn't forget that Dortmund's attack plays such a pivotal role in actually their whole defensive game. I mean, in terms of actually taking the whole sort of Barcelona high pressing game to a new level, Dortmund have used their 4 attackers to great effect in terms of, you know, breaking up play, especially given the way that Guardiola likes to play, you know, short passing from the back, very possession based. I think it's going to be fascinating to see if Klopp moves away from his 4-2-3-1 like he has done in the past. He's gone for 4-3-3 with a more congested midfield. We saw against Bayern in the Super Cup match how effective they can be on the counter-attack. I mean, some of the football was as good as I've seen for a long time on the counter-attack. It'll be interesting to see on both sides whether Guardiola has learned from that, whether they try and suck Dortmund into certain areas of the park. I mean, Philipp Lahm has been fantastic in central midfield, so I mean, it's certainly poised for a perfect game. I mean, Dortmund probably have to go into the game thinking they're going to outscore Bayern. Lewandowski is in great form. Royce maybe not so much, but certainly you can't doubt his qualities at all.
What's the mentality that Lewandowski goes into this game with? There's so much talk about him having all agreed to sign in January with Munich, and other people saying he could be off to the Premier League. Unlikely he's going to stay at Dortmund, of course. Does Lewandowski's head get a little bit kerfuffled going into this this sort of tie against a side that he's looking to play against, or is he strictly business? I'm going out and I'm going to bag as many as I can for Dortmund.
To be honest, it's difficult to say without being in the head of Lewandowski himself. I mean, he signed obviously a lucrative contract to get a pay rise for this season. I think it was somewhere in the region of about £3 million. He then came out a few weeks later and basically, you know, slapped Dortmund in the face, telling them that he's going to Bayern. Since then, it's quieting down a little bit. I mean, I think Manchester United and Chelsea will have their hopes up that nothing has been agreed between the two parties. I think in his head something has to come into effect. He has to know that this might be his future teammates. Is he going to be playing at 100%? You would hope so, being a professional, but it's difficult to judge given a lot of the PR coming from the Lewandowski camp, from his agent, from him himself. It's not really came across very professionally in the last 12 months, I have to admit.
What about the reception for somebody returning to Dortmund after leaving them? Does he play? Does Dortmund know how to shut him down? Obviously, they know him very well. And along with that, does he get a warm reception on his return back to Weidenfeld Stadium?
I'll put it this way, I wouldn't want to be in his shoes going back there because, you know, 82,000 people in that ground, it's going to be a heck of an atmosphere. And, you know, there was sections of the crowd that booed him when he played against Real Madrid. Obviously, he confirmed that he was leaving a few hours before, and it would be really interesting to see whether they think of the good memories, whether they think of the bad memories. I think in Guts's case, you know, he's probably seen as a little bit of a traitor almost, because I think in the past there's been instances where Matthias Sammer has gone from Dortmund to Bayern. Ottmar Hitzfeld, the legendary coach, went from Dortmund to Bayern. But I think in Guts's case, being so young, Dortmund have given him so much in his early career that they might see him almost as betraying them this summer. It's going to be interesting to see. I think he'll definitely start. I think he's, in the last few games, he's been fantastic. He's really found his feet in Bayern. Whether he's going to have such a pivotal impact in the game as an attacking midfielder as we saw at Dortmund, I'm not 100% sure. I think he might play maybe in a wide area, but certainly that is one of the fascinating subplots going into the game.
And just finally, on this tie, at least, Ross, I think I know the answer to this question, but I've got to check with the expert, of course. Going into this, I mean, with Champions League football around the corner as well and big games for Dortmund, does that sway their mentality at all going into this game against Bayern, or does it influence Klopp's team selection at all?
I think at the moment his hands are probably tied in his back because, you know, he has so many defensive injury problems. I mean, his back four that he started at Wembley, Piszczek, Subotic, Hummels and Schmelzer are all injured. Piszczek is just back into full training, so I'd be very surprised if he's even on the bench on Saturday. They've obviously just signed Manuel Friedrich, 34-year-old defender, as an emergency signing to try and heal those wounds at the back. I think from a Dortmund point of view, I mean, even if they finish second or third this season in the Bundesliga, they'll be quite happy. I think the Champions League is where they want to be. Whether they've got, even if they do try to rest players on Saturday, whether they've still got the strength to beat Napoli and Marseille and secure their place in the next round, it's not really a guarantee. So I think Klopp will probably treat this as a massive game, not just in the context of 3 points, but psychologically between the two clubs, who are obviously, you know, they're vying for one top spot in German football.
Elsewhere around Germany, just quickly, Ross, before we let you go, it's Bayern Leverkusen just behind in third place behind Dortmund, level on points, of course, in the Bundesliga. They take on Hertha Berlin. Hertha, who have had a very positive start to the season, on the road as well. Is there a chance we could see a Leverkusen slip up? They have looked very strong at the start of this year, it has to be said.
To be honest, I don't think so. I think they are so consistent. I mean, it's interesting to watch them in terms of their sort of run-of-the-mill matches against Hertha Berlin, as it is at the weekend. They're not fantastic to watch. They don't have a real plethora of classy players, but they're so strong physically. You know, they're very powerful in midfield, and they seem to just get the job done every week. And if they keep doing that, they might lose against Leverkusen. Sorry, they might lose against Bayern. They might lose against Dortmund. But if they keep winning these games every week, then there's a chance that they might still be in the hunt for a top two position at the end of the season. As you say, Hertha had a great start to the season. I was fortunate enough to watch them beat Eintracht Frankfurt 6-1 in the Olympic Stadium. They have some excellent players. I think we all sort of wrote them off at the start of the season as being one of the ones who we would expect to struggle in the league. But when you look at them on paper, they do actually have a lot of good Bundesliga players. Obviously, from an American point of view, they have John Anthony Brooks, who's really settled into that centre half role. But I can't see Leverkusen slipping up anytime soon, to be honest.
And they've got a wonderful informed striker at the moment, Adrian Ramos, who's really hitting his peak. Do you think either he or on the Leverkusen side, Stefan Kiesling, either of them could be attracting some attention going into January? They've both had excellent starts to the season. Kiesling, of course, with a fantastic year last year as well.
Yeah, I mean, Kiesling, I think, has attracted interest before from England in particular. I think West Ham were actually interested in him maybe about 18 months ago. So it would be interesting to see if he had gone there into the Premier League. But it's a weird one, the Kiesling, because, you know, he obviously isn't Yogi Löw's favourite. It's incredible that he's not in the national team. I mean, top goal scorer in the calendar year of 2012, top goal scorer for 2012-2013. He can't really do much more apart from maybe doing it in the Champions League, which he has done to an extent, but not to the same degree as what Lewandowski has done in the latter stages. I mean, I think Kiesling would be a fantastic signing for any English club. Adrian Ramos is certainly one that's caught a lot by surprise. He suits exactly how Hertha play. You know, it's going back to the whole idea that Dortmund have of transition. You know, they've got great pace, and Adrian Ramos in particular has such an explosive second gear on to, you know, go by a defender, and he's clearly been on the goal front this season as well.
Ross, I've run out of time, I'm afraid, to chat with you any longer. And I know you're a very busy man and need to get back to your usual business, but we appreciate you taking the time out to have a chat with us on all things Bundesliga, especially those top two games coming up from the weekend. Can you give us a score prediction for the Dortmund-Bayern game before you go, mate?
Oh, you've put me on the spot
there.
I think maybe unpopular, I think Bayern are going to win by maybe 3 or 4.
Not Bayern, Ross. Come on.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible, especially given how hip Dortmund have been among all the sort of casual fans.
It's the people's team, I think, Borussia Dortmund, of this rivalry, that's for sure. And we look forward to catching that game and catching up with you very soon as well, Ross, man. We really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with us today, and we'll catch up very soon indeed, man.
Cheers, guys. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Ross Dunbar there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things German football and, of course, getting into the big game this weekend, Dortmund against Bayern Munich, and a little bit of a catch-up as well on that England-Germany game from a German perspective. Can't wait to sit down and watch Dortmund against Bayern this weekend. Should be an absolute cracker indeed. As I say, 32 goals Dortmund have scored so far this season against a Bayern defence that's only conceded 7. Bayern still without a win in the Bundesliga against Dortmund in the last 6 meetings. Only Werder Bremen have 12 matches, and 8 matches have gone on longer runs without a Bundesliga defeat against the record champions Bayern Munich. And Bayern, of course, as Ross said, 37 games, a new Bundesliga record of being unbeaten. Will it be 38? Dortmund, I'm sure, would love to end that run. But a big thanks there to Ross Dunbar for joining us here on World Football Daily. Talking a little bit of German football. Isn't there, Rafa, isn't there a Dunbar? Isn't that a beer or something like that? Ross Dunbar? I'm sure it's a German beer or something.
I'm not sure. I haven't had that particular German beer yet, Juice, but I believe you. I believe you. I did at one point when I was in Glasgow. Ross is a good Scottish boy. I was in Glasgow and I drank at a German style pub house. and that was pretty fantastic. It was underground, and I had some really, I mean, they had beer from all over the place, and I had some really crazy, it was like a tiger or something, and my wife had something else, and she actually had the better beer, but whatever, it's all good. Just kind of connecting to your story in one way or another, Juice. Happy Friday to you, sir.
Happy Friday, my man. It's a very peculiar Friday, and I think we should probably... I think what we need to do first and foremost, we should explain... actually, before we explain what's happening next week with Wealth Daily, I just want to say that I never realised... You said on the show yesterday that you love maps, right? I never realised how many people also love maps. I thought, I didn't want to say it yesterday on the show, but I thought, all right, Raph, yeah, we all love maps. Like, don't get me wrong, I do enjoy a good map. And, you know, you can put some pretty entertaining stuff on maps, population density, all that kind of thing. But in general, the phrase, I love maps, doesn't get thrown out very often around this show, around in the world in general. Yesterday on Twitter, though, we put the maps up that we were talking about yesterday for our... what's going on with Major League Soccer, where should they expand to, where we think the open areas are for expansion. And we put those maps up on our Twitter feed, on the Facebook page, and a lot of people really like maps. I mean, we had a number of our tweets kind of get favorited yesterday with the pictures of the maps and stuff. We got into a load of conversations with people through it as well. I never realized, Raph, you are not in the minority when it comes to loving maps. It seems that they're a lot more popular than I ever imagined. And
I personally thought it, you know, myself, a little dorky, a little kind of dweebish, but I felt rallied behind yesterday, man. I was so excited to see our little Twitter handle blowing up, and thank you for your diligent map work.
I actually ended up making a final
cartography.
I made that final map as well with all of the teams all together, color coded and whatever. You know, I really enjoyed messing around with that. That's very, very fun. I mean, yeah. But again, as you say, I think I do put myself into the bracket of being a little bit nerdy and a little bit kind of, you know me. I make Star Wars jokes for crying out loud. That's I need to. If anybody can explain why maps are so interesting, let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com at wfootballdaily.
Question to you: is it worse to make Star Wars jokes or Star Trek jokes?
Oh, it's much worse to make Star Trek jokes because you have Star Trek fans. You know, they some of them kind of speak Klingon and all this sort of thing. Nah, none of that. You don't see Star Wars fans rocking around trying to speak Ewok. All right, I'm just throwing that out there. In the scale of nerddom, Star Wars is infinitely cooler than Star Trek.
No, but you get people like me who try to bust out like a Chewbacca sound every now and then, and that kind of gets awkward. But
Chewie's he's a big hairy pimp. So we'll allow the Chewbacca noises every so often. Let's get into and explain first and foremost, Raph, what's happening with the show next week, because I'm delighted to say that I have left one of my jobs that I do. It was my last day today. And had that awkward goodbye of, bye. You know, I didn't enjoy this job really at all. It was just an easy way to make money as I started to build up my freelance commentary career and stuff. And I very much used to use a lot of the time just prepping for World Football Daily, reading through kind of football headlines. I did very little work and got paid a reasonable amount of money for it. You know, like, I guess $14 an hour. On reception for like 5 hours, just messing about, reading about football. So it was ideal in terms of an easy moneymaker. And I had this kind of that awkward goodbye of, oh, and I hope you've learned so much while you've been here, and I hope it's been a great time. And it's like, yeah, there's like a handful of like four people or so that I really got on with in the office, and everybody else we kind of, I don't know, everybody else very much took their jobs far too seriously for their own good sometimes. So it was that kind of, oh, bye, oh, best of luck for the future. I was like, yeah, whatever. But what it does mean is that starting next week, I'm working on up at a radio station in Birmingham for a month or so. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be reshuffling the show around slightly. Obviously, Raph and I, this might be the last time you and I get to chat, really, Raph, for a fair bit of time, because... We're not going to be able to converse down the Skype line, down the interweb, and chat football, which is going to be a real shame. And I have to say, I'm very much going to miss that. We will have to try and pre-record some IKTS or something at some point each week, just so I can have my my at least weekly dose of chatting with you, my man. But what it means is that what Rafa is going to be taking charge of busting out some of the interviews with our top guests that we will keep coming on the show. Don't worry about that. The content on World Football Daily might even get better because Rafa and I won't get as sidetracked, maybe. We've already spoken about maps and Star Trek today, so I'm just putting it out there. So we will still have our top guests coming on the show, helping us out and taking us through the fantastic world of football. Raf will be doing the interviews, and then myself, and we're trying to arrange a number of kind of guest co-hosts to come on the show, and trying to get George Metellus lined up to take on Wednesdays, for instance. Kim Tate has said she's interested in being involved in that. So we will have still myself and somebody else bringing you the show. Rafa will be taking control of the interviews, and we'll still be throwing in a load of different stuff as well. For instance, Monday night, Monday night, I will be at the biggest derby this weekend. You could talk about your Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund all you want. You can talk about the Liverpool derby between Everton and, of course, the mighty Reds of Anfield, Liverpool. But when it comes down to it, Monday night football is West Brom against Aston Villa, and that's the big one that we all want to know. You know, there are kids in growing up in the favelas of Brazil, getting sparked by the World Cup fever and thinking one day I want to be playing on a Monday night in the at the Hawthorns against Aston Villa. That's the dream for me. That's the dream. So we will be bringing you some content from that. What should be a magnificent night of football. But do not fear, World Football Daily will still keep ticking along. We're just reshuffling a few bits around for this one.
Let's be honest. We pride ourselves on our general football discussion. It's not so much, you know, we're not trying to break new crazy ground here. You know, we're not breaking news stories very often. Every now and then, hey, you know, we stumble upon some sprains of news stories. We don't break news stories, we sprain it, right?
Yeah.
no, but to be honest,
a torn ligament of a news story, I like to think. Yeah.
Right. We just generally like to kind of keep the football discussion going, and that's where it's at. Nothing's changing, really. You're not going anywhere yet. I'm sure there will be a day when you know Oliver the Juice Wilson will have to graduate past World Football Daily, and that will be cool.
I've already had an emotional goodbye at one job.
It's so emotional, but you know, we'll be able to take it. And you know, we always wish the best of all of our hosts. You've done an amazing job, Juice, and you will continue to be an amazing part of this show. Again, I think it's only going through kind of like the holidays. So we'll probably be coming back, I think.
Just before Christmas, we should be back to normal kind of thing. So it's just, yeah, as I say, like 3-4 weeks or something like that.
We're back to normal right before we take a holiday break.
Exactly. Talking of, and of course we've got Thanksgiving coming up as well. I mean, tis the season suddenly. I mean, once you get into Thanksgiving, it is the holiday season for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of that turkey dinner, I have to say. And maybe I'll try and rustle something up on Thursday.
I would send you a turkey, but there's a shortage going on. So, yeah, sorry.
Of course. Don't worry about it. Let's get down to some of the football discussion, though, Raf.
Can I read a quick email? Because I think that we're kind of leaving this international break, I just thought it'd be a really good one to cover. Juve J writes in World Cup teams. He goes, "Hey guys, I'm writing this prior to the Uruguay Jordan match, but I feel confident that Uruguay will not give up 5 goals." You were right, Jay. That said, 24 of the 32 teams in Brazil, 2014, were in South Africa, 2010. Or 2010. Every team from Africa who qualified for the 2010 World Cup qualified for 2014. South Africa did not have to qualify then and will not be there in 2014. Every team from CONCACAF who qualified for 2010 qualified for 2014, plus an extra spot for Costa Rica, who was added to the lineup. Three out of the four Asian qualifiers in 2010 will be in Brazil. North Korea will be replaced by Iran. Oceania lost their playoff, so now New Zealand, no New Zealand this time. Four out of the five CONMEBOL teams will be in Brazil, plus they pick up an extra slot for hosting. So Paraguay is out, and Ecuador and Colombia are in. The biggest turnover is in UEFA. Denmark, Serbia, Slovakia, Slovenia, out. Russia, Croatia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Belgium, in. This bodes well for Comba Bowl teams, who had five of five teams get out of their group, and who will be playing in their home continent. UVJ. It was quite nice. It was quite succinct. It was very to the point. And
it's interesting to see, aside from maybe
Denmark, I'm not too fussed about who we lost from UEFA.
No, not really. And it's quite interesting to see how we praise the interest that the hexagonal creates, that Conan Ball's qualification creates. Yet it's interesting to see that despite all the excitement and the thrill around it, there's not much of a change with it. You wonder if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think obviously it's a good thing because we are seeing that the best of the best do start coming through in those areas. Whereas in UEFA, you know, there's so many teams, it's so easy, especially so many mediocre teams. It's so easy for them to kind of get mixed up with each other, and the odd dog has its day and gets through to the World Cup, which again, you know, creates those nice stories that we were talking about. You know, it's a shame that Iceland couldn't make it through this year, for instance. Croatia instead winning that second leg 2-0. But do you like the idea of there being a more like higher turnover and change around of teams coming going to the World Cup, or would you rather have it as we are making sure we see the best of the best come through? Does it help kind of promote almost football's evolution in different countries? I mean, you look at Africa, for instance. You know, this UVJ saying there that it's the same teams, but a lot of those kind of playoff games in Africa were pretty open down to the final kind of few minutes of some of them. You know, Senegal almost pulled it back against the Ivory Coast. Obviously, Egypt were done and dusted. Burkina Faso arguably should have gone through against Algeria and came very close to doing it as well. So, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be a negative having the same teams going through. But I think there's you have to look at the backstory as well. Of these teams that have got through and see that actually we came very close, for instance, in South America as well, to seeing some different guys making it through to the World Cup. And it just shows how competitive and so how exciting some of these World Cup qualification processes can be. And it also, I think, shows how maybe disappointing sometimes UEFA can be with the quality of games that come through and the quality of teams that make it through to the World Cup.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it was kind of an interesting just email when I first read it, it's going to make you also kind of look back at 2010 and see what the differences are in the team, see who's back, on the same teams, see what kind of continuity that forms for some of these teams. I was talking a lot with my Sunday League team, and I think it was Gio who was claiming Uruguay to be his dark horse this year. And I mean, to be honest, Juice, I don't know. I'm not really too impressed with Uruguay. I'm not expecting them to really surprise me at all. I could see them getting through the group.
Kicking side as well, which is very frustrating with Uruguay. When they get frustrated in a game, the kind of beautiful technical play that they can play goes out the window, and they do get quiet, kind of almost overly aggressive on the pitch, and start taking frustrations out in other different ways. And I don't think they are the most entertaining side to watch in South America by any way, shape or form. You know, I think we saw that in the Confederations Cup. That it wasn't a side that you really got sucked into and really drawn into watching. I don't think I was impressed by Japan and the way they were able to move the ball about. Brazil obviously were great to watch. Italy were exciting, as was Spain, but I was really ever got too enticed by Uruguay. Probably the biggest disappointment really out of the whole tournament, I felt.
Well, I mean, I don't know. In 2010, I was thoroughly entertained by the grittiness that it took that team to kind of get to where they were, the self-sacrifice of Luis Suarez. I don't mind Uruguay. I just don't think that they're that deep, and I don't expect them to go as deep as they did last year. Or last cycle, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, anyways.
I'd be very surprised if they did. It's Chile. Yeah. Chile are the dark outsiders. Chile and Colombia are the teams to put, if you're a gambling person, which of course I am not really, are the teams to put a little flutter on, as they'd say. down at the local betting shop. I have a cheeky flutter on Chile, mate. They're looking all right. 20-1 to win the World Cup. You know what I mean? Yeah, them and Colombia will be the dark horses, I think, especially down in South America. I think we do know. Well, we don't know, obviously, but I really don't think we're going to see a European winner. I think it is going to be a South American winner of the World Cup. It won't be an Asian or an African or a North American. I can definitely put my foot down and say that. Sorry, US fans.
It's right. It's fine. Don't worry. We'll make it another World Cup cycle. Don't worry.
Yeah, sure. So Jay, big thanks for the email. Raf, I wanted to ask you about, do you think it's mind games that Lionel Messi's playing with Cristiano Ronaldo? Do you think Messi is almost conceding the Ballon d'Or when he hails Ronaldo and says that he's, you know, in incredible form at the moment? It's an odd time for Messi to be coming out and making a statement about somebody who we've never really seen these two guys get on. They don't. I was watching a program about Ronaldo on the last weekend, and he didn't say he hated Lionel Messi, but he said he just respected him. You know, he's a competitor. He's somebody who I play against. I do respect him, but there was no kind of intention that there was any sort of real friendship there or anything like that, which I can't imagine there being. You know, they're complete opposites in terms of Ronaldo's tall, Messi's short. One's Nike, one's Adidas, one's Barca, one's Real Madrid, one's Portugal, one's Argentina, European, South American. You know, they're about as far apart from each other as they can be, except for the footballing skill level that they both possess. Do you find it weird? Because we don't see them. They don't often really come out in the media and start talking about each other too much, do they? They generally kind of don't get drawn into this. They'll get drawn into a Madrid debate or a Barca debate. But it's mainly their players and their teammates, sorry, that kind of rally around them and say, oh, well, Messi is better than Ronaldo, or Ronaldo is better than Messi. And those two just kind of let their football kind of do the talking. I find it very, just a little odd that Messi has come out and kind of hailed Ronaldo and praised his recent form. He's always there scoring goals in all the games and taking part in his national and club side. He's been doing that for many years, and whether he is at his peak or a bit below, it makes no difference. Which is also a bit weird as well, from say whether he's at his peak or a bit below, as it implies that Ronaldo is not always on top form as well. Do you think there's anything to it, or do you think it's just Messi being asked about him and finally kind of, you know, doing a little bit more talking than normal about it?
Yeah, I think maybe he's just doing a little bit more talking than normal. And I think that in all honesty, I think it was yesterday where you know, Ronnie kind of comes out and says that he's, yeah, I am, this is me at my top level. I am on top form. And so, I mean, I get it, you know, especially after kind of demolishing Sweden the way he did. But, you know, that kind of conceitedness and then also the way that FIFA kind of reopened voting, I think some people are a little bit, you know, a little bit put off by the way that maybe FIFA are bending a little bit to possibly help Ronaldo. I don't know if that is the case or not, but it does seem a bit fishy. And this is just an easy way for Messi to kind of keep that squeaky clean image, that good boy kind of facade of his, and rise above it all by simply saying, yeah, man, he's good, he's great. If he wins, that's fantastic. I wish all the best for him. It's like he's kind of rising above. So now, if he does not win the Ballon d'Or, and Ronnie does win the Ballon d'Or, you know, people are going to be, oh, but Ronnie, oh, look at the way he celebrates. You know, Messi, he's so much more humble. He's such a, you know, like, he's only done good for himself by saying that. And, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. One thing that I do wish, and I was kind of thinking about this recently because I watched the Magic Bird documentary on HBO. I think you told me to watch that. I don't know. Anyways, but I was watching that, and it kind of reminds me of the same way. Like, these guys, they're just so good, and they are the two best of the best. And when they compete, it's not like – it's not all, you know, high fives, hey, how are you, slap ass and stuff like that. It is competition, and these guys want to beat each other. Mm. And I love that. I feel that when, you know, when they kind of shake hands and don't look at each other, or, you know, it's just – they stand awkwardly, you know, apart – at like a corner or something like that. These kind of things really get me excited. I love to see competitors just at each other's throats, and that is their way of kind of doing it on the pitch, is just to, you know, not look at each other, not give each other, you know, any kind of credit or not necessarily credit, but just the time of day. It is about them. They are focused and they are wanting to beat the other star. And I really like that. I think that, well, obviously Messi is a bigger team player and he's going to probably get more out of his team longer. But, you know, Ronnie is an undeniable talent. And I mean, I'm just enjoying the entire kind of rivalry between the two.
Lionel Messi will not be playing this weekend, of course, out injured for 8 weeks. Barca taking on Granada and Real Madrid taking on Almeria away from home. Ronaldo will be featuring in that, I'm sure. Raf, we need to get into a little bit of IKTS before we wrap up the show today. Yeah. And take a look at the...
I know, this one went quick, man. I'm sorry.
The fixtures and whatnot. We also need to... I wanted to chat a little more intently with you about the playoffs coming up as well, so I don't know where to go here. But what I'm going to ask you, the question that's been roaming around the footballing pages, the number of people that are coming out and saying that the Everton Liverpool derby is the biggest derby in football, in English football and football in general. I'm really, look, I have no doubt Liverpool is a fantastic footballing city. The history of football that comes out of that city is incredible, and Everton are an incredible side, considering, you know, one of the finest footballing sides that England has in terms of its history, in terms of the way it presents itself as a club a lot of the time, and of course the success they've had over the few over the years. Obviously, though, that success hasn't really been as prominent in the last kind of 15 years or so. Liverpool, kind of similarly, FA Cups, League Cups, you know, they had that Champions League, which everybody remembers and everybody loves to remind me about the incredible comeback in Istanbul, blah, blah. Yeah, let's never talk of that ever again. But Liverpool do have this immense footballing history themselves. One of the greatest sides historically in English football. And of course, mm-hmm. one of the most successful teams to play the game. But in this modern day time, when the Premier League has been dominated by the likes of Chelsea, United and Arsenal, Liverpool have barely come close to having a sniff at the Premier League, aside from that year where Benitez and his team really should have won it, and United ended up pipping them to the post. That's really the closest they've been to a Premier League. The Champions League is a completely different ball game. You have to give them a lot of credit for that. But I think mm-hmm. when you talk about the greatest derbies domestically, I don't think that... you can put it, the rivalry in the history, yes, definitely, between these two sides. And the proximity the proximity of their stadiums, history. You know, the fact you can pretty much throw a stone from Anfield and almost hit Goodison Park. It's a very unique thing to have in a city, especially a city as passionate about football like Liverpool. But Manchester United against Liverpool, I think, is a greater derby because the build-up has been for the last few years, you know, United waiting to outdo Liverpool with the number of league titles that they've won, and even if they do, it's kind of Liverpool can beat them on their day and say, well, you've beaten us now to the league titles 22 or however many it is, but I tell you what, you still can't beat us in the seasons that you do win it. So that kind of, there's that real intense rivalry to it. I think Manchester United against Chelsea, Manchester United, Man City are bigger games and far more important games. The history is great with this, and history makes so much of what a derby is. Of course it does. But sure. there are some far greater and far more important derby games, I think, around England and around the world. And, Boca River Plate, I think, is more important. I think the Derby d'Italia, Inter against Juve, I think Juve against Milan is probably a bigger and more important game as well because of the title credentials that these teams have had in recent years. I think you can look at, obviously, Barca against Real Madrid's bigger, PSG Monaco. They're not derbies in the, you know, proximity and sharing a town, but they are derbies in rivalry.
Throw me a bone. Throw me a bone. Come on, just say it. Come on.
They're just not as good.
Oh, come on. Come on, Juicy. You know the old fur match is worth it. You know it.
Yeah.
I mean, people are talking about it when it's not even possible, really. People are kind of hoping and praying that it happens in a magical cup run somehow. There's potential fixing going on to try to get a match going. Come on, Juice.
Yeah, all right, I'll give you the old firm as well. Go on then.
It's up there.
Mainly
up
because there. The importance that Celtic have in Scottish football these days. I think. but yeah, I'm just Maybe it's because I'm, you know, a slightly more modern football viewer. You know, I wasn't sucked into the glory days of Liverpool. I missed that bandwagon completely. But I just don't. It's not as big to me as some of the other.
There's so much going on presently that distracts away from some of that history. And I mean, it's more of like a local thing, because, you know, if it doesn't have title implications and things like that, then I don't know. It's just it doesn't mean as much to me, my opinion.
It's as important as Newcastle Sunderland is, you know, and that's immensely important to Newcastle and Sunderland fans and bragging rights. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it is as important as some of the other kind of big games that you get around world football. That's for sure. But talking of that, let's get onto a little bit of IKTS, Raf, to wrap up the show and run through the fixtures for this weekend. Let's kick it off with that game, Raf. The early kickoff on Saturday in the Premier League is, of course, Liverpool against Everton. Probably one of the biggest games in the world, I think, actually, Raf. But how do you see this one playing out? Daniel Sturridge might not be fit for this one. We're still waiting for news on that. I mean, Liverpool have got a wonderful start to their season, but they haven't been as impressive, I think, as some people have made them out to be. Sturridge is starting to get lazy as well. I've noticed this. He's started to kind of just wander aimlessly about the place a little bit more. His bubble might be bursting a tad. And, of course, Everton. They got the great Romelu Lukaku. I mean, they can't compete with that, surely. No, how do you see this one going?
It's either going to be a draw or a 1-0 victory to Liverpool. It's Martinez's first year. I just feel like Liverpool probably a little more stable at this point. So 1-0 to Liverpool.
I'm giving Everton the edge. They have only won one in the last 13 Premier League Merseyside derbies. But at home at Goodison Park against Liverpool, I'm giving Everton a 1-0 win. I think Liverpool's bubble bursts this weekend. Here's a game that I'm really looking forward to. Looking forward to, in terms of the quality of football that's going to be played down the Emirates on Saturday afternoon. Arsenal taking on Southampton. Pochettino believes his side can go there and upset everybody and take a notch out of Arsenal's belt. What do you think? Does Southampton have it? I'm giving them a chance here. I'm gonna be really brave and give them a 2-1 win on the road.
Ooh, wow! Yeah, see, I'm giving them a chance here too, but at the same time, Arsenal really haven't given up very many goals at home this year. So I'm going with just a 1-1 draw. Good luck to Southampton. I hope they do it. I mean, I wouldn't be upset losing points on this one. By the way, I got no points last week, Juice. No points.
Oh, because it was an international break.
I'm sorry. Well, the week before then.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I was like, well, of course you did. We didn't have any games, Raf. I struggled as well, but yeah. I think I had minus 30.
I scored 90 points on an international break. What do you know about that?
I'd be impressed. I would be very impressed by that. Next game, Fulham against Swansea. Martin Yol, is the writing on the wall? Is he going to be done and dusted soon? Will Swansea be putting the final nail in the coffin of Fulham as their horrific start to the season continues? I'm saying a big yes on this one. I'm giving Swansea a big 3-0 win. Wilfried Bonny, who grabbed two in his last outing, I think is going to grab another one at least.
I do think that it kind of does seal Martin Yule's fate, unfortunately. I like the guy. He's a big, jolly character. No, 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 no. That's my Martin Yule impression. No, 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 no. Anyways, but I see it 2-0 Swansea.
2-0 Swansea, yeah. I can't see Fulham getting anything against Laudrup's impressive Swansea side that continue to display some fine form.
The away form of this weekend looking like it could come into play a little bit.
I think so. Big points on the road for some of these sides. Hull against Crystal Palace, another battle of the new boys and another chance for one of these two sides to pull themselves away from the lower part of the table and get some points in the bank in time for what we're expecting both these sides to be involved in that relegation battle come the end of the season. Steve Bruce taking on Crystal Palace, who haven't still announced a manager yet. Who do you think it's going to be?
I mean, I could care less. Hull City 1-0.
Yeah, I've gone with Hull. It's a 1-0 win. Palace are just in a mess at the moment, and Hull have at least looked reasonably organised. And I do like Huddleston and Livermore in the heart of their midfield at the moment. I mean, I'm not saying I'm really enjoying Hull, but I tell you what, I think they'll be far further from the bottom of the table than Crystal Palace at the end of the season. Newcastle take on Norwich this weekend as well. Big game for the Geordies. Big game for Chris Hughton as well, who's had a lot of criticism at the start of this season. Norwich, who Van Volsvinkel has not been firing on all cylinders like they hoped. Nathan Redmond hasn't been inspiring like I think they thought he would as well. Newcastle, on the other hand, could do with getting a few more points under their belt,
yeah,
just to ease the pressure off, because there was plenty on Pardew not long ago.
Well, I could see them stumbling because this is one of those matches that where they do kind of blow themselves up. But I'm going to put my banker on it for Newcastle to win 2-0.
Newcastle to win 2-0 and to move up onto 20 points, if that's the case, Raf. Yeah, I think this is a home win. I'm going to go with the draw. I'm put down a draw. I'm going to go 1-1. 1-1 Newcastle against Norwich. I think Norwich will have used the international break to maybe find a bit more confidence and hopefully be able to grab something on the road. Stoke against Sunderland. Incredible that Gus Poyet telling Sunderland it's my way or the highway. The new manager going having a fit of the Di Canios, so to speak, saying that he wants to be involved in the transfer dealings of the club and he wants to have the power when it comes to buying and selling players. And that means that if he doesn't, he said he will walk out of the club. Another managerial nightmare potentially on their hands for Sunderland. Is that going to affect them going on the road to the Britannia against the Potters, who, of course, are more than apt to picking up points at home in a very intense atmosphere that can be created down there? Although it's still been a poor start to their season as well. Been really poor, in fact, Stoke. When your goalkeeper's your top goal scorer, doesn't look good, does it?
Mm-mm. No, not at all, man. I have it 1-1 there.
1-1. I'm going to give Stoke 3 points on this. I'm going 1-0. They'll edge out Sunderland, who are going to be getting really stuck down towards the bottom of the table. 7 points at the moment from the start of the season. Only Palace below them at the moment. West Ham against Chelsea. Can Allardyce's men, called the Pep Guardiola, I believe it was, on this show of English football, Sam Allardyce. He's apparently super intelligent, but going very direct most of the time with West Ham. They've still got striker problems as well against Chelsea and Mourinho's men, the firepower. It's not been as emphatic as we thought it would with Mourinho. Is he 100% happy with his squad, with his side? Do you think West Ham can upset the odds and get something?
Come on, West Ham. No, I don't think so. But I do think they'll make it interesting, only because it's just how Chelsea play. I got a 2-1 away victory for Chelsea.
1-1. Definitely giving West Ham some home love against Chelsea on this on the show today. Manchester City take on Tottenham on the first game on Sunday. This is going to be a very interesting game indeed. The last time Tottenham failed to score in three successive games back in January 2009. Man City have lost 7 of the 26 Premier League games that Vincent Kompany hasn't started in, compared to just 8 of 61 when he has started. It's going to be very interesting indeed. City, I think, could really do with this win. Tottenham desperate for it as well, though. They are really struggling when it comes to going forward. Soldado's not been firing them in except from 12 yards from a static ball, position. Going to the Etihad as well, a place where Manchester City seem to get goals, goals, goals. Aguero and Negredo look great as well. I'm only seeing one winner here. I'm seeing it being City. I'm seeing it being 2-1.
Yeah. I too think that City are really kind of desperate for points. It is in Manchester, and like you said, Tottenham have just been struggling to score. So I got a 3-1 to City. Although I got my safety on it just in case.
Does Loris come back into the side? I know we had Friedel and Loris couldn't make it because of the concussion and stuff. I'm assuming you don't think Friedel's done enough to keep his position against Newcastle.
No. I think Hugo Lloris steps right back between the posts.
Moyes' men, do they stumble on the road in Wales against Cardiff?
No, not a chance. And this is actually a little bit of a breather weekend for them because, or it's like an extended international break for them. 2-0 to the Red Devils. Come on, United.
I think it'll be tougher than you think, Raf, but I do see it. I'm going with the 2-0. And of course, the big Monday night extravaganza, West Brom against Aston Villa at the Hawthorns. You can mock all you want, Raf, but for the people of the Midlands, this is an absolutely massive game for them. What are you seeing? West Brom against Villa. I think it's 10th against 11th in the Premier League table, this one.
I'm thinking it's not going to be separated by anything at all, and unfortunately, you guys are going to be let down. It's going to be a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. Are you having a giraffe? I'm going for the draw, but I'm saying 4 goals. 2-2. I'm just looking forward to this one immensely. I've been really impressed by the Baggies. They had a very slow start. Berahino looks absolutely cracking, though, for them. Villa, of course, I think Benteke is going to be nice and rested and revived and back to full form after the international break. And I'm really looking forward to seeing he and Libor Kosac again, because I really liked him when they played the two up front against Cardiff. It was a terrible first half, but that second half, Villa raised their game slightly. And Leandro Bakuna to fire in another cracking free kick for this season. Bekuma, that's what they're going to call him. That is your IKTS for this week. Those are your Premier League fixtures. We have plenty of games, though, coming up around the globe, I should say, because it's not all about European football this week, although it is a lot about Borussia Dortmund against Bayern Munich in Germany. That's the evening game on Saturday. Stuttgart take on Gladbach tonight, as do Nuremberg against Wolfsburg. Sorry, they play tomorrow, Nuremberg and Wolfsburg. Braunschweig take on Freiburg. Frankfurt take on Schalke. Augsburg take on Hoffenheim. And Hertha Berlin take on Bayer Leverkusen before the big game. And then on Sunday, Hamburg take on Hanover. Werder Bremen get to take on Mainz. In France, we have French Ligue 1 action tonight. Ajaccio taking on Marseille. PSG take on Reims. We were talking about that yesterday on the show with Matt Serber. I showed Matt, by the way, that the weather girl who did promise to do the weather naked if France made it through to the 2014 World Cup after being 2-0 down against the Ukraine. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. Fair play on her getting that done for sure. Evian take on Lorient, Lyon take on Valenciennes, Montpellier take on Guingamp, Stade Rennais take on Bordeaux, Sochaux take on Bastia, and then on Sunday, Lille take on Toulouse. OGC Nice take on Saint-Étienne, and Nantes take on Monaco. We also, of course, have plenty of games coming up in Italy. Serie A action back for us as well, and that kicks off tomorrow with Verona taking on Chievo, Milan take on Genoa, Napoli take on Parma, and then on Sunday, Livorno take on Juventus, Sampdoria take on Lazio, Sassuolo take on Atalanta, Torino take on Catania, Udinese take on Fiorentina, and of course Bologna take on Inter. Monday night, Roma take on Cagliari. It's been a rough couple of games for Roma. I'm sure that international break will be very pleasing for them, just to maybe get away from it, now get back to Serie A and keep Juventus at bay as they look to close the gap. In Spain, Valladolid take on Osasuna tonight, Barcelona take on Granada tomorrow, Sociedad take on Celta Vigo, Almeria, they host Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid host Getafe, and then on Sunday, Levante against Villarreal, Rayo Vallecano take on Espanyol, Elche take on Valencia, Sevilla take on Betis, and Malaga take on Athletic Club Bilbao. And of course, the Major League Soccer playoffs, the Portland Timbers. Can they turn around that 4-2 defeat against RSL from the first leg? And of course, Sporting Kansas City take on the Houston Dynamo after they played out a 0-0 draw down in Houston. You have to think that SKC have it all in their hands as they host the Dynamo. The Dynamo, of course, so good at home and keeping them down to a clean sheet. It's absolutely fantastic for SKC. And I think we're going to see an absolute thriller as Portland take on RSL. 2 goals down. Can Portland come back? We will find out on Monday's edition of the show. A big thanks to our guests all this week. And of course, big thanks to Raf. A big thanks to you guys for listening and sticking with us. We will be back next week. New format, new rules, same great show. World Football Daily will keep on going. Don't you worry about that. And we'll be back at the same time on Monday. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend of football. There are some absolutely thrilling games to feast your eyes on. And of course, if you can beat Raf in IKTS, I would really appreciate it. Take care. We'll see you on Monday.